Hi, everybody. I'm Dr. Artis, and this is the Dr. Artis Show, and I'm very excited to spend today with you. This is actually part two of a part two series on natural solutions and how to prevent prenatal infections. I hope you enjoyed part one. That was a very organic conversation with one of the most incredible nurse practitioners in the world who actually has a clinic in Dallas, Texas, in which they've been helping thousands of mothers pregnant to labor and delivery, to then taking care of their infants and toddlers afterwards. And that is Michelle Routon. So I hope you enjoyed part one. That was an incredible conversation. But for all of our audiences who are used to the Dr. Artis Show and have tuned in for years, I'm going to actually walk you through a PowerPoint of the things the medical profession does publish about prenatal infections, which ones are the most common, how many people are affected, why these are a big deal, and then how many babies are affected. What's the worry about some of these different types of infections we talked about, from group B strep to toxoplasmosis, you name it. We're going to talk about those things today. And then I'm going to actually walk you through what medical science has confirmed are natural solutions to the drug alternatives during pregnancy for prenatal infections. So if you've ever been pregnant, which I have not and never will be, although I have five children, I did not birth them or grow them inside of me. But for any of you out there who have either had children, suffered with prenatal infections, have children, grandchildren who are pregnant, soon to be pregnant, will be pregnant, this is information you might want to know, because the only thing they're going to be told is vaccinate, 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 use antibiotics. And I'm about to show you why the medical profession publishes that may be an issue you want to reconsider or avoid. So let's dive into how to prevent prenatal infections. So prenatal being pregnancy infections. Go to the resources tab at the Dr. Artis Show and download the How to Prevent Prenatal Infections PowerPoint that I'm about to show you and walk you through and give you some of my insights into why this information is so shocking, I think, and so relevant to all people who are pregnant or in a family or household of someone who is pregnant. All right, so here's the actual PowerPoint. We're going to walk the audiences through this here. I'm very excited to review this PowerPoint. Why? Because kids are amazing, and I love being a dad. And so I want very healthy pregnancies for everyone else in the world. Not the dads, the moms. It's going to be great. All right, so here we go. Scan the QR code. If you're not already a current follower of the Dr. Artis Show, just scan it, put it in your email. You'll be notified of everything we're doing in the future. All right, so according to Essex County, OBGYN.org, echobgyn.org/common prenatal infections and how to prevent them. This is their article, Common Prenatal Infections and How to Prevent Them. What is a prenatal infection? Well, I already mentioned it, but a prenatal infection occurs when germs cause illness that impacts the pregnant individual, the unborn baby. Like how they say pregnant individual, as if it can't be female. All right. Or only female. The unborn baby or the newborn after delivery. Germs can reach the womb in two main ways: through the vagina and cervix by traveling upward, or through the placenta via the maternal mom's bloodstream. What are some of the most common? Number one, they list group B strep, abbreviated GBS. Now, for those of you who are familiar with vaccine side effects, you'll hear about Guillain-Barré syndrome. That's not what we're talking about here. And I talked about that in part one with Michelle Routon. About 25% of pregnant women, they say, carry group B strep without symptoms. If passed to the baby during delivery, it can lead to severe infections like pneumonia or meningitis. Number two, chlamydia and gonorrhea. These are sexually transmitted infections that often have no symptoms. Untreated infections can lead to complications such as preterm birth, low birth weight, and newborn eye infections. Number three, they list is Zika virus. Zika virus is transmitted by mosquito bites and sexual contact. If contracted during pregnancy, Zika can cause severe birth defects like microcephaly, shrunken brain, shrunken heads, a condition affecting brain development. It's almost like the kids have no top of their heads. It's really awful if you look at the side effects. Number four, prenatal infection while pregnant. Cytomegalovirus, abbreviated CMV, is a common virus that spreads through bodily fluids, often with mild or no symptoms in adults. If passed to a baby, though, during pregnancy, it can cause hearing loss, vision problems, and developmental delays. And then fifth disease, also called parvovirus. Fifth disease is a viral infection, but causes a rash and flu-like symptoms, commonly seen in children. It can increase the risk of anemia, low iron, or miscarriage if contacted during pregnancy or contracted during pregnancy, particularly in the first half of the pregnancy. Listeriosis. Listeriosis is a bacterial infection, which Michelle Rotten and I talked about ad nauseum, caused by consuming contaminated food. It can lead to miscarriage, stillbirth, or severe illness in newborns. Toxoplasmosis is a parasitic infection found in contaminated food, soil, and cat feces. This is a parasite, and we talked about this a lot. Michelle Rotten and I already did in part one. It can cause serious complications such as brain and eye damage in babies if contracted during pregnancy. Remember, the medical profession tells you in America, parasites don't exist in humans in America, but it's listed as the seventh most common pregnancy infection in humans. How to prevent prenatal infections. Let's see what the medical profession and ECOBGYN.org want you to believe. Number one, to prevent them, you have to routinely screen somebody if they have them or not. Number two, tell the pregnant women to practice safe sex using condoms. Stay up to date on vaccinations, obviously, and you'll see we underline this whole claim. Vaccinations such as flu shots and Tdap, tetanus, diphtheria, and pertussis vaccines help protect both you, mom, and your baby from preventable illnesses. Okay, we're about to show you. Maintain good hygiene. Okay, great. Whatever that means. Wash your hands. Take a shower. Now, this is a medical research study. The prevalence, this is out of clinical and molecular teratology, prevalence of self-reported infection during pregnancy among control mothers in the National Birth Defects Prevention Study. This is what they discovered. Overall, 63.6% of women reported at least one infection during pregnancy. Nearly half, 49.6% of women reported a respiratory infection. 20.5% reported a fever at some point during their pregnancy. 17% reported a urinary tract infection, so it burned when they peed. 4.2% reported a yeast infection, like a vaginal yeast infection, and meaning they could probably smell it or feel it. And 3.4% reported a sexually transmitted disease. 3.4. Women younger than 35 years reported non-respiratory infections more frequently than women aged 35 years or older. So if you're younger than 35, it was infections not affecting the lungs. But older than 35, it was usually a respiratory infection. What were their conclusions? Reported infections during pregnancy are common. So this is a good reason for the Dr. Artist Show in February of 2026, which is when this is being recorded. Did you know that February 2026 is Prenatal Infection Awareness Month? Well, that's because it's common, I guess. So it's a good thing we're covering this today, implying that a small increase in risk of birth defects or other adverse pregnancy outcomes could have a significant health impact on the public. So what is being given to our mothers? Well, look here. ACOG.org. Vaccines during pregnancy. Vaccines are recommended during pregnancy to protect against serious illnesses. The most common vaccines given in pregnancy include the flu, Tdap, COVID-19, and respiratory syncytial virus called RSV. Ask me how I feel about these vaccines. Wait till I show you the awesome medical research that is proven already. There are several minerals. Selenium, to be specific, was one of them. I'm going to show you some incredible research studies already done with selenium to combat all of these infections we just showed you. Just one mineral. It's going to be amazing. Even in pregnant women, it's amazing. Just watch. All right, so they're telling you the flu shot and Tdap or Dtap, diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis vaccines are important during pregnancy. Tdap and the flu vaccine. So let's go to the flu virus vaccines. You'll see the brand names of Afluria, pediatric quadrivalent. You will see there's actually, shockingly, look, 265 brands of flu vaccines. Do you think your OBGYN telling you that while you're pregnant, you need a flu vaccine? Do you think they even know there's 265 different brands of flu shots? And do you know what's in all of them? I bet you don't. Let's read together what they say about the influenza virus vaccines. Influenza virus vaccine is used for use in adults and children to prevent infection caused by the flu virus. This vaccine helps your body develop immunity to the disease, but it will not treat an active infection you already have. Look at the last sentence, everybody. I quote all you pregnant women being told you need a flu vaccine. Like any vaccine, says drugs.com, influenza virus vaccine may not provide protection from disease in every person. Wait, what? I thought these were all effective. Just so y'all know, every vaccine, if you read the package insert for every vaccine ever, it actually has this exact same statement. Like any vaccine, this vaccine may not provide protection from disease in every person. Oh, really? So why are you forcing every kid to go to school and get these vaccines if they don't work in 100% of all people? Now, look at this. The injectable influenza virus vaccine or flu shot is made from killed viruses. And we put a question mark there because I remember going to chiropractic school and learning that the definition of the word virus included these two things, neither living nor dead. Okay, well, if it's not living and it's not dead, how can you kill it? Okay. Killed viruses. All right. Now, I want to remind everybody that I have in my possession 30-plus Latin to English dictionaries from 1771 till today. The word virus is only a Latin word, and it only has one definition in common in every dictionary in every country from 1771 till 2026 today, when we're recording this. The word virus has only one English translation from the Latin word virus. It means a poison, comma, especially of snake's venom, or it just means venom. So I'd like to ask you, how do you kill venom? If inside the flu virus vaccine is a killed virus, how do you kill a poison? How do you kill a venom? Just curious. I'll leave that for you to discover. And once you figure it out, please write to me the explanation at info@thedrartistshow.com. I can't wait to hear your reasoning and rationale why they can call it a killed virus that I learned 20-something years ago. By definition, a virus is neither dead nor living. Okay, good. It's just this weird thing that can replicate inside the cell of a body. And then I've looked up four centuries of Latin to English dictionaries. Virus is a Latin word, not English, and it only translates into English to mean venom or poison, especially from snake's venom. How do you kill that? How do you kill poison or venom? Anyway, somebody explain it to me. It'd be exciting. All right. Let's go further into drugs.com. They're going to get into the side effects of flu vaccines that is recommended to all pregnant women. Up to 10% will experience chest tightness after the FDA approved these shots and after the clinical trials were done on humans with flu vaccines. Myocarditis was reported by medical doctors who gave the flu shot after being FDA approved and after the trials were all done. All the percentages you see here on side effects were in the clinical trials before the FDA approved it. Then once they tell all medical doctors, you can now give the flu shot. It's been FDA approved. The medical doctors are responsible for reporting back to the government what injuries or diseases or deaths are caused by the flu shot or whatever drug they're giving. FDA approved. Myocarditis is a published reported side effect of flu vaccines. All of y'all, did you know it? Now let's go to dermatological. Up to 10% of people develop facial swelling. That's called angioedema, by the way. During the trial with flu vaccines. After the FDA approved it, cellulitis-like reactions. Do y'all know how painful that is, cellulitis? Okay. Now let's go to GI problems. Look at this, the flu shot. For all pregnant women, you guys know that when you're pregnant, diarrhea leading to dehydration is a big concern. Food poisoning, a huge concern. Did you know that 25% of everybody in the clinical trials for flu vaccines experienced diarrhea? One in four. That'll create dehydration, and that is risky for pregnancies at any state or trimester. Vomiting in 15% of everybody. Nausea up to 11%. Have you ever been pregnant? You ever been nauseous from smells, tastes, wanting to vomit? How would you like to be more nauseous? One in 10 of you. All right, then hypersensitivity, anaphylactic shock after the FDA reported that this is approved and medical doctors started giving it to pregnant women, anaphylactic shock has been reported. Serum sickness, just so y'all know, you see that down there? Serum sickness after the FDA approved it. And then shock. Do you know what serum sickness is? This is not a joke. Do you know what serum sickness is? I just mentioned viruses, its definition being venom or poison from snake's venom. Did you know that serum sickness was first ever described by a guy named Albert Calmette, who worked for Louis Pasteur in the 1880s? Serum sickness, Albert Calmette was paid by Louis Pasteur's Institute to take 10 king cobra snakes in the 1880s while living in Saigon and develop the first ever anti-venom injection for king cobra snake bite. He is the father of anti-venom therapy. Do you know what he described in 1886 was a side effect of injecting antivenom he developed back into the victim who has venom inside of them? That's where serum sickness first was ever described. And do you know that myocarditis, for the first time in history, was described by Albert Calmette to be a symptom of serum sickness, which he said are side effects to antivenom therapy by day 5 and 14 after antivenom therapy was given to you. Now, I want you to stay here with me. Myocarditis was a published side effect of the COVID-19 vaccines. Do you remember that Pfizer and Moderna vaccines were given in two doses? One dose, and then you were said for the first time ever in history, you're not considered fully vaccinated until day 14 when you get your second one. Do you want to know why Dr. Artis thinks they made you wait 14 days from the first one? Because they knew about serum sickness with anti-venom therapy. Remember COVID-19, its two spike proteins were identified to be snake venom from the king cobra and the crate snake. Are you starting to see the theme here? Look at this. Flu vaccines have the exact same described serum sickness diagnosis as anti-venom therapy first described by the father of anti-venom, called Albert Calmette in the 1880s. Is it all starting to make sense to you now? All right, look at this. Check this out. Did you know this is a published side effect of flu vaccines, even in pregnant women? That you can give somebody this killed virus vaccine for the flu, and it can cause the pregnant woman or anybody to get influenza B infection. In parentheses, it's published. We call that vaccine failure. Ask your doctor if flu vaccines really work. As promised and guaranteed. You know, this is more amazing. Every hospital staff member around the world has been required up until COVID and even this year to have a flu shot every flu season. Did you know that it can cause people to get the flu? Influenza B infection. And that it's not actually guaranteed to keep everybody from getting the flu? Why do they make sure you get it then if it doesn't work all the time? All right. Loss of appetite in 32% of all people. Do you think that's good for pregnant women? 1 in 3 people in clinical trials, human trials, 1 in 3 lost their appetite. Do you think that's good for the mom pregnant, building a baby inside of her from the nutrients she eats? Eating habit changes, 21%, 1 in 5. Flu shots continued. This is in the very common side effect sessions. Injection site tenderness in 90%. Injection site pain up to 64%. Swelling, 65%. Redness, erythema, 60%. Itching, 30%. 19% injection site induration, hardening, scaling. Bruising, hematoma, 17%. Ecchymosis, 15%. Lump, 11%. Don't forget it. Musculoskeletal. Oh, did you know this? 1 in 3, 36% of pregnant women or not pregnant women, when you get the flu shot, will develop myalgia and musculoskeletal pain. Myalgia is musculoskeletal pain. Did you know it'll create muscle aches in up to 30%, 29%? Arthralgia is joint pain. Could you imagine? Your feet already hurt, knees already hurt, walking around your third trimester. You should get a flu shot. This doesn't seem like it's the greatest idea. Oh, how about this? After the FDA approves it, post-marketing reports by MDs giving the flu shot to pregnant women and not. Abnormal gait, arthritis being diagnosed from the flu shot, extremity pains, and decreased injected limb mobility. Could you imagine getting a flu shot and you can't use your right arm? Especially if you've got multiple kids, you got to carry another youngin. Maybe you're Mormon, you were raised to breed, and you're pregnant with like your fifth kid, you got 4 under 4, like I used to have at one point, and you're carrying those kids around. Could you imagine if one limb didn't work and you got diaper bags and strollers? Not really sure you knew this. Did you know that 11% of all people getting the flu shots report within days, runny nose for days, cough, 10% of everybody? The flu has cough as a symptom. Imagine getting that 1 in 10 guaranteed to get it from the flu shot alone. Bronchitis, look at that. After the FDA approved it, pulmonary congestion, shortness of breath. Not sure those are good ideas for pregnancy. The baby needs oxygen. How about your eyes? Did you know 10% will experience conjunctivitis, red eyes? 1 in 10. Psychiatric, irritability. I don't know about y'all, but I know a lot of pregnant women who become extremely irritable with all the hormone fluctuations and pressure building up in their body. I know a lot of irritable pregnant women. There's very few that are just pleasant the whole 9 to 10 months. But did you know that in clinical trials, 54% of everybody that got the flu vaccine was irritable from the flu vaccine? How about abnormal crying? This is not for babies. This is for all ages. 40% will just start abnormally crying. It's not just from watching The Notebook while pregnant. No. Or soap operas. No. Go get the flu shot. 1 in 2 just about will just have abnormal crying spells. Husbands, if you're watching this, grandpa's watching this, you got daughters that are pregnant, wives that are pregnant, you might want to make sure they don't get the flu shot if they are emotional. It's already an emotional experience. All right, what about your nervous system? Flu vaccine side effects. 37.7% report drowsiness, sleepiness, and 35% headache in up to 30% of them. Can you imagine being pregnant? I can't. Can you imagine being pregnant? Those who are pregnant, been pregnant, having all the pressure and belly issues and joint issues and having to pee every 5 minutes and then having headaches. 1 in 3 will experience headaches. After the FDA approved it, medical doctors are like, those aren't the only issues nervous system wise. There are patients we give this to who develop febrile seizures while pregnant. Ask your doctor if febrile seizures are great for a pregnant woman. Did you know vitamin C beats the flu and doesn't have any of the side effects? I'm about to show you the research studies. And it's completely safe for pregnant women. In fact, I'm going to show you vitamin C studies that impact the placenta's health and immunity for the baby. All right. What other side effects of the flu vaccines that they only offer to pregnant women to beat prenatal infections of the flu? Pain. 59% of people reported that. Malaise. Not wanting to engage. You don't have the energy. You're just lethargic, sitting in the corner. That's 38% of all people. Then chronic fatigue is 22%, 1 in 5. Did you know ear infections occur in 10% of all people that get flu shots? Influenza-like illness, do you see that? That's how they describe getting the flu from the flu vaccine. 10%, 1 in 10 pregnant women or anybody will develop influenza-like illness. Didn't you get the vaccine to prevent having influenza-like illness? Ask your doctor if influenza-like illness is right for you or a fever, which is pyrexia, you see there. Oh, my God. Hope this is getting absurd to you. Did you know that after the FDA approved it, we put a smiley face there. Did you know it's listed that flu shots can kill you? After the FDA approved it. That means MDs gave the flu vaccine to a pregnant woman or a regular person, not pregnant, and they died from the flu vaccine. Did you know some people have died and it's been reported back to the FDA from the flu vaccine? Ask your doctor if deadly flu vaccines are right for your daughter, wife, and unborn child or grandchild. This was awesome. Reported by Fox News. This came out last year, I believe. Flu vaccine linked to higher infections, says early research. Oh, wow. Let's read what the Cleveland Clinic figured out in 2025. A new study from Cleveland Clinic suggests that it might not have the protective effects people expect. No way. The preprint study, which was published on medrxiv.org this week, located in infection data or looked at infection data from 2024 to 2025 flu season. Researchers found that among 53,000 Cleveland Clinic employees in Northern Ohio, getting the flu vaccine was associated with a 27% increase in flu infections compared to those who didn't get it. So, Fox News is reporting it. The Cleveland Clinic, very well-known and reputable hospital, is reporting our employees who got the flu vaccines, we saw a 27% increase in flu infections in those that got the flu vaccine. That's the opposite of what they promote vaccines to do. So this isn't conspiratorial, tinfoil hat, doctor, artist, chiropractor talking. No, I'm reporting to you what mainstream media, Cleveland Clinic, and the CDC and drugs.com are telling you about these drugs and the FDA. The Mayo Clinic, pregnancy week by week. Is it safe to take antibiotics during pregnancy? Because they offer antibiotics for infections, bacterial, strep, group B strep is the most common. That's a bacteria. Here we go. Antibiotics are often prescribed during pregnancy, says the Mayo Clinic. Here are some antibiotics thought of as safe to take while pregnant. Penicillins, including amoxicillin and ampicillin. And you see the rest of them down there. Clindamycin, Flagyl. All right, here we go. Let's look at penicillin because this is very often given to pregnant women. Yeah, I just showed you what the Mayo Clinic said. So let's just go look at penicillin. There have been reports of inadvertent intravenous administration of penicillin, which has been associated with cardiorespiratory arrest and death.
Whoa, what?
In a medical setting, they injected penicillin in somebody who tested positive for a bacterial infection, and it has been reported with an FDA box warning, black box warning, which is what this is, from the package insert on drugs.com. The FDA knows that penicillin can cause cardiorespiratory arrest and death. And this is the most common prescription for prenatal infection called Group B strep that you're about to learn about. We already reviewed it, but we're going to dive into it. Penicillin. Look at the rest of these awesome side effects after the FDA approved this penicillin. Gangrene, numbness of the extremities, cyanosis of the extremities, turning blue, neurovascular damage, cellulitis, hemorrhaging. It's amazing. If a side effect, this is, now I want to say here, this is local adverse events where it was injected or given to you, this penicillin. Frequency not reported. That is a designation here. We're defining what that means. If it's not a percentage from a human trial, what is frequency not reported? You'll notice in some side effects, we'll show you the exact percentage. Those percentages only come from the clinical trials done on humans of the drug. After the trials are done and they submit their findings of their trials to the FDA reviews them, then approves them, the drug, and then they tell the MDs to start prescribing it or put it on the CDC vaccine schedule if it's a vaccine. And when the MDs start giving it to people, because now it's been FDA approved, when they report the side effects that happened to their patient they gave that drug to, approved by the FDA, there aren't percentages produced for the FDA to publish for you. They just collect all the side effects being reported by MDs, and this is what is called frequency not reported. It's a side effect. If a side effect has the word frequency not reported, this means that neither the product information nor clinical trials have specified exactly how many people have experienced the side effect for this particular medicine. Not that it hasn't happened. They just don't know how many. That data was only connected in the trial or collected during the trial. Sometimes side effects are not reported until after a drug goes to market. When this happens, there's no way to know how many people have experienced this side effect reliably. This is why they just say, we don't know the number. All right, so we're going to continue looking at penicillin. Frequency not reported after the FDA approved it. But these were all reported to the FDA after they gave it to a patient. Anaphylactic reaction, including shock and death, reported with penicillin. The most commonly prescribed drug for pregnant women with the most common prenatal infection called Group B strep, which Michelle Routon and I in part one talked about ad nauseum. Cardiovascular side effects reported after the FDA approved penicillin. Cardiac arrest. Ask your OBGYN when they recommend penicillin for your pregnant self, if it's right for you and your baby, knowing it has caused some people to die when they gave it to them. Nervous system, look, seizures, coma. Do you think those are good for a pregnant woman? Did you know those were reported side effects of penicillin? GI, you'll look at diarrhea, you know, it's not good, that creates dehydration. Thrombocytopenia, blood clotting disorders, lymphadenopathy. Oh my goodness, hemolytic anemia. Red blood cells are being destroyed. How's that sound? That only delivers the oxygen that sustains life in your baby. You think hemolytic anemia is right for you? Ask your doctor for penicillin. Increased AST. These are liver markers. So it's leading to liver dysfunction and disease and inflammation. Penicillin. Joint disorders. That's called arthritis, by the way. Rhabdomyolysis, a super painful supposed virus in your muscles that causes involuntary contractions and pain. Exacerbation of arthritis, quadriceps, femoris, fibrosis, and atrophy. Your femoral head of your femur will die. Do you guys remember what happened to Bo Jackson when he got hurt? Had to have a hip replacement in the prime of his athletic career, got tackled as an LA Raider. That's what happened to him. The femoris, fibrosis, atrophy. His femur. Well, this is the quadriceps, which is the muscle that attaches to there. That quad muscle will die. Pretty amazing. Psychiatric. Did you know that penicillin is known to cause hallucinations, fear of impending death, and psychosis? Ask your doctor if that's right for you while pregnant. I'm not sure if that helps any pregnant woman to hallucinate or to fear they're about to die. Blindness has been reported as a side effect of penicillin. Urticaria, rashes all over the body, peeling skin, fatigue, not so bueno for pregnant women. They're already tired. Now let's go to marchofdimes.org. Prescription medicine during pregnancy. Most pregnant people, about 9 in 10, why do they keep saying people? It is women. Most pregnant women, about 9 in 10 or 90%, take medicine during pregnancy. And many pregnant women, about 7 in 10 or 70%, take at least one prescription medicine while they're pregnant. However, March of Dimes says, not all prescription medication is safe to use during pregnancy. Providers may prescribe opioids to relieve pain, such as after injury or surgery. Imagine that. Did you know infants are born with withdrawal symptoms if the mom's given opioids for pain? Opioid use can be harmful to your baby during pregnancy. It can cause neonatal abstinence syndrome. Can you just say a baby that's addicted? Or a neonatal opioid withdrawal syndrome. NAS is a group of conditions that affects a baby who's been exposed to certain substances, such as opioids, in the womb. A baby with NAS goes through withdrawal after birth. These are some of the more common prescription opioids. Codeine, given to pregnant women. Codeine, fentanyl, hydrocodone. Crazy. Methadone, morphine, oxycodone, oxymorphone, tapentadol. Now, I want to read this to you. Can taking prescription medications during pregnancy cause birth defects? It is important to talk to your provider if you're pregnant or planning a pregnancy and you're taking prescription medicines. Some prescription medications may increase the risk of or cause birth defects in your baby. You know what doesn't do that? Supplements don't. If you take them during pregnancy, these include but are not limited to these drugs. And I just want to review these real quick with you. If you have a loved one or you yourself are pregnant, looking to be pregnant, make sure you're not taking any of these damn drugs. Number one, you will see their names there. They're kind of small on my end. So isotretinoin, which is another name for a brand name, Accutane for acne. Opioids cause birth defects. Thiolidomide, used to treat certain skin conditions or infections. And HIV, warfarin, Coumadin, or a blood thinner can cause birth defects. Molnupiravir, which is used to treat adults with COVID. Certain medicines like ACE inhibitors, and they give you the names, captopril and allopril. I will throw in lisinopril. They're all the same thing, ACE inhibitors. All three of these, by the way, anything ending with pril is actually synthetic dried snake venom from a snake in Brazil called the Jirocas viper. That's all it is, a neurotoxic venom from that snake in 1981. The first drug of its kind called an ACE inhibitor from that snake venom was called captopril, which you see there. Later, another version was called lisinopril, and then enalapril. They're all the same thing. Ask your doctor and OBGYN if snake venom is right for you while pregnant, because it will kill your baby and cause horrible side effects in you. Remember, this is a document about drugs prescribed to pregnant women that can cause birth defects, so you might want to ask your doctor to get off these damn things. Certain medicines used to treat depression and other mental health issues. These include Paxil, Prozac, and lithium. Anticonvulsant medicines, look at the list, Epitol, Stavzor, Depakane, Depakone. Did you know those can cause birth defects? I thought that was important for you to know. All right, then womensmentalhealth.org. Pregnancy and medications, making informed, evidence-based decisions benefiting mother and baby. Let's dive into what they say. What are the risks of medication exposure? All medication diffuse readily. I repeat, all medicine goes across the placenta easily, and no psychotropic drug has yet been approved by the Food and Drug Administration for use during pregnancy. Psychotropic, picture your antidepressants, antibipolar, schizophrenia, you name it. When prescribing medicines during pregnancy, one must consider the following risk associated with prenatal exposure. Risk of teratogenesis, birth defects, risk of neonatal toxicity, and risk of long-term neurobehavioral sequelae. Their brain can't develop the rest of their life normally. Autism, anybody? I mean, it's just an example of delayed neurodevelopment. What Dr. Artis recommends to keep the mothers and children healthy? All right, I mentioned vitamin C already earlier. Let's dive into the Zika virus, because Zika is what they tell you is one of those most horrible prenatal infections that need to be treated. with vaccines or drugs. All right. High dose intravenous vitamin C for pregnant women and Zika. For many years, not a few, for many years, it's been widely known that vitamin C has a variety of physiological functions with clinical efficacy. Vitamin C is a water-soluble vitamin, meaning it dissolves in water, and has been used to prevent many diseases and or infections like the common cold and other viral infections. Influenza is a viral infection, by the way. So is the common cold, supposedly, and adenovirus, coronaviruses. Okay, listen. Vitamin C has been used to prevent many diseases or infections like common cold and other viral infections. Okay, any pregnant women, if you have an OBGYN or midwife who's scared that you might get a viral infection, vitamin C has already been proven to prevent those. So if they're not recommending vitamin C to you, you might want to ask why not. Ascorbic acid, otherwise known as vitamin C, scavenges for oxidative stress markers called reactive oxygen species, increases vascular blood flow and connective tissue integrity, improves immune function, increases interferon that prevents cancer and other problems, and assists in leukocyte-phagocyte functions, those white blood cells that help clear infections. And vitamin C helps every cell in the human body increase hydrogen peroxide production, which I've taught everybody ad nauseum for 3 or 4 years. It increases the number and aggressiveness of white blood cells, which is your immune system, which you're told this is what vaccines do. Oh my God, for many years, vitamin C has already been proven that it can make your body produce more self-defending immune cells called white blood cells all by itself. Notice, the Mayo Clinic didn't say that's what we give to pregnant women to beat prenatal infections. Vaccines and drugs? Come on, man. All right. Vitamin C is an efficient antioxidant and possesses antiviral activity. They don't even tell you which virus, but they're going to dive into Zika. It is antiviral against all viruses, which is why during COVID, I was like, everybody should be on vitamin C, 5,000 milligrams. For example, it has been shown that vitamin C is an essential factor in the production of the antiviral immune response during the early phase of viral infections through the production of type 1 interferons, which upregulates NK cells, natural killer cells of infections and cancers, and cytotoxic, cell toxic T lymphocyte activity. So if there's an infection, a cancerous cell, them T lymphocytes kill it, and vitamin C increases the production of all those. You're welcome. Studies have indicated that vitamin C can be used as an inactivating agent for both RNA viruses and DNA viruses, impacting viral infectivity. Researcher Bayoun in 2011 and his colleagues. In addition, vitamin C can detoxify viral products that produce pain and inflammation. Wow. Anybody ever had the flu and all their joints hurt and muscle hurts for 4 or 5 days? Did you know vitamin C gets rid of all of that? And did your infectious disease doctor tell you that? All this evidence confirms the effectiveness of vitamin C against viral infections and against Zika fever, as suggested by the patient's swift response to intravenous vitamin C. Furthermore, no negative side effects resulted during or after the treatment. No side effects from the Zika virus infection in the pregnant lady at all with vitamin C. Did you see all the side effects from the flu shot for that virus and penicillin for bacterial infections? White blood cells that help clear infections from pregnant and non-pregnant people, influence of vitamin C on lymphocytes. Vitamin C has often been linked to cancer treatment. Already in the 1970s, wait, hold on. Did you know this? Since the 70s? How many oncologists out there are recommending vitamin C that's been determined since the 70s to be helpful in cancer treatment? I mean, I constantly hear chemotherapy, radiation, and surgery. I don't hear chemo, radiation, surgery, and vitamin C. Do you? The 70s were 50 years ago, people. Half a century ago. Already in the 70s, Cameron and Pauling reported the high doses of ascorbic acid, vitamin C, intravenously increased the survival time of terminal cancer patients by more than 4 times. What? That means if you have a loved one diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, sorry, Patrick Swayze, you get diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. If you did high-dose vitamin C, as already figured out in the 50s by these two researchers, Cameron and Pauling, they already determined you just give high-dose intravenous vitamin C, you can quadruple their lifespan from whatever their diagnosis was. Ask your doctor or oncologist if more living time is right for you or your loved one who's been diagnosed with cancer. And search for factors that enhance this stuff. We discovered that ascorbic acid, vitamin C, enhances human T cell proliferation. That's the growth of T cells called thymus cells. Besides this effect on T cell proliferation, we also found multiple effects on early T cell development, which is the primary cells that help you fight off infections, all of them. We showed that vitamin C is required in vitro in a lab for the transition of DN, we'll just stay there, DN precursors to the next so-called double positive stage in feeder-free cultures, as well as cultures with stromal cells, cells of the body, when culturing T cells from cord blood or GCSF stimulated hematopoietic stem cells. Stay with me here. This is important. You don't need to understand all of that. We found that in feeder-free system, early maturation or growth of T cells after 3 weeks was improved under the influence of vitamin C in a dose-dependent way. These results are in line with a mouse study in which the investigators cultured adult bone marrow, derived hematopoietic progenitor cells on stromal cells, and showed that these cells only differentiate to the DP stage, which we showed above, the double positive phase, in the presence of vitamin C. Okay, well, if you want to fend off these cancer developing cells, vitamin C in a dose dependent manner works scientifically. In summary, in humans and mice, vitamin C, abbreviated ascorbic acid here, is required in vitro for the early development of T cells, which help fight cancer. As it overcomes a development block from double negative to double positive cells. Furthermore, vitamin C speeds up the growth rate and maturation process of T lymphocytes that are made in your bone marrow, which defend against all infections. This is vitamin C. It doesn't get any easier. Researcher Batter and his team examined if the impaired T cell function in type 1 diabetes, type 1 diabetics have a hard time having healthy T cells. This is why they cannot fight infections as easy as normal people. There is an impaired T cell function in type 1 diabetics that can be improved with vitamin C supplementation. I repeat, the reduced immune effects caused by type 1 diabetes can be reversed with vitamin C supplementation. Down below, let's read the last sentence. Ascorbic acid or vitamin C supplementation, 100 milligrams for every 2.2 pounds of body weight for 2 months, restored immune function, CD28 cells, cytokine secretion and proliferation of T cells. Ask your doctor if vitamin C is right for you. Now, I mentioned selenium earlier. It's time to dive into that. Now, we've covered vitamin C. Every pregnant woman should be on vitamin C, or on a prenatal has vitamin C in it. I know every pregnant woman is basically told since the book, What to Expect When You're Expecting. Everybody knows in there, folate, vitamin B9. Well, I just showed you vitamin C, why it's important for prenatal infections and immunity. Now we're going to dive into selenium, one of my favorite minerals on the planet. Selenium and at-risk pregnancy, challenges and controversies. This is out of Springer. Trophoblast, which help to produce the attachment of the placenta to the uterus wall in a pregnant woman and to bring blood flow from the mom into the baby. Trophoblast cells forming the outer layer of the blastocyst contribute to implantation of the fertilized egg. It also is a part of the placenta's development and oxygen and metabolite exchange between the embryo and the mother, leading to successful fetal development. So just remember, this is about selenium, but they're defining what trophoblasts are, these cells that attach the placenta and help provide nutrition from the mother's bloodstream to the baby. This is all about selenium. Trophoblasts, these cells that connect the uterus to the placenta, bring nourishment and blood flow to the baby. In the presence of connecting with the mother's blood vessels, they accelerate villi formation, these little bitty finger-like cells, while expanding their surface area, which leads to increased intervillous space. So you have these little finger-like projections. The trophoblasts make them get wider. Oxidative stress levels are thus increased, triggering the expression of heat shock proteins, which results in retardation of the baby's development and possible pregnancy failure. More oxygen coming because these villi are separating, more blood can come to the baby. Now watch. Recently, it was reported that selenium supplementation induced mitochondrial biogenesis in trophoblastic cancer cell lines by increasing the expression of selenoprotein H, a form of selenium, and that selenium-treated trophoblast under low oxygen conditions increased mitochondria, energy-producing parts of the cell, membrane potential, while decreasing reactive oxidation species. Selenium has the potential to improve the survival rate and the invasive ability of trophoblasts through the mechanisms of the trophoblast response to oxidative stress are not so far completely understood. They just know selenium helps to reduce the oxidative stress. So watch, selenium deficiency has often been observed at the setting of adverse pregnancy outcomes, including low selenium in the blood. They have found that in miscarriage, linked to preeclampsia and preterm birth, preemies. Specifically, when oxidative stress, which is generated during normal placental development by trophoblast cells, is exaggerated because of heightened oxidative stress. But also, if there is reduced presence of antioxidant micronutrients like vitamin C and selenium, those things that reduce oxidative stress in the placenta and maternal circulation, adverse pregnancy outcomes might come up. In 2001, a pioneering study in the field conducted in Wales, including 40 women with first trimester non-reoccurring miscarriage, measured the blood levels of selenium, albumin, and total protein concentration. A reduction in the blood level of selenium occurred in the first trimester of pregnancies that progressed to term. Okay, watch. They found that in the first trimester, there was a reduction in their selenium level throughout the trimester that went down in those that led to a full-term pregnancy. However, so there was just a slight decline in that first trimester of selenium. However, a further highly statistically significant decrease, a much larger decrease in selenium, was observed in women who miscarried, clearly indicating a biological link of low selenium levels with miscarriage. How many of you know people who have miscarriages? Multiple miscarriages. How many of you knew it was simple as supplementing with selenium? 200 micrograms to 600 micrograms. 200 is what's in one capsule of our selenium. Hypertensive pathologies or disease processes often occur in pregnancy, particularly during the late second and third trimesters with selenium deficiency, appearing to be strongly implicated. If there's any high blood pressure disease states in pregnancy, hypertensive disease states, high blood pressure in pregnancy in the second and third trimester, selenium deficiency is linked. How many times do they rush a woman into surgery for emergency C-section because they have high blood pressure? It's disgusting. Preeclampsia is a multi-system disorder that can have disruptive effects on the mother and the fetus and is a major cause of death among pregnant women. In 2014, a double-blind placebo-controlled trial was conducted with 230 premaparous pregnant women randomized to selenium at 60 micrograms. Or placebo treatment from 12 to 14 weeks of gestation until delivery. The aim was to investigate whether a small increase in selenium intake of a pregnant woman with low selenium status would protect against the risk of preeclampsia, as assessed by preeclampsia biomarkers. So we did a study in 2015. They wanted to know in 230 women who have had preeclampsia in the past, what happens if we give them selenium in the second and third trimester during the 12 to 14 weeks of gestation, which is actually only 3 to 4 months. Okay. Significantly higher levels of blood selenium and plasma selenoop were observed in the selenium-treated group at 35 weeks. So they gave it between 12 and 14 weeks of pregnancy, and they still had higher amounts of selenium 35 weeks into pregnancy than in the placebo group, in which both parameters continually decreased significantly. Serum soluble vascular endothelial growth factor receptor, an anti-angiogenic factor linked with the risk of preeclampsia, was decreased in the selenium-treated group by week 35. So the thing linked to causing preeclampsia was reduced in those that got the selenium supplementation. OBGYNs, are you recommending selenium to your pregnant women who have suffered or struggled with preeclampsia in the past or currently? Are you encouraging all your pregnant women to take selenium? It even says, particularly in those with the lowest amount of selenium, they had the best outcomes. Thus, selenium supplementation may potentially reduce the risk of preeclampsia in pregnant women that have low levels of selenium. Now let's go dive into the most common prenatal infection, group B strep. Selenium exerts antimicrobial activity against the perinatal pathogen called Streptococcus aglactiae, and it perturbs bacterial interactions with human gestational membranes. What in the world is Streptococcus aglactiae? That's called group B strep. Streptococcus aglactiae, abbreviated GBS, group B strep, is a gram-positive pathogen that is one of the primary causes of adverse pregnancy outcomes. GBS infections are associated with premature rupture of membranes, membranes, preterm birth, preemies, neonatal sepsis, and maternal sepsis and death. This is the most common, we told you earlier and showed you, this is the most common prenatal infection. This is how to prevent them. We've already gone into vitamin C. We're now into selenium. At a concentration of 5,000 micrograms of selenium, all strains of group B strep exhibit significant inhibition of bacterial growth. Wait, what? You give high-dose selenium and none of the bacterial forms of group B strep grow? Demonstrating the deleterious effects, the deadly effects, of extremely high selenium concentrations on group B strep growth. How many OBGYNs or gynecologists are recommending selenium when they're worried about GBS, group B strep? These findings suggest that the antimicrobial activity of selenium is distinct and specific to certain concentrations of selenium and that the cation resistance determinant encoding gene, CADD, is crucial for group B strep growth in the presence of selenium stress. It's amazing. They even tell you the scientific reason how it works. To better assess how selenium stress could influence group B strep, host pathogen, human, pregnant woman, and bacteria interactions at the maternal, mother, and fetal interface, where the trophoblasts are, we utilized our model of human gestational membrane, ex vivo, outside of the human body, in a culture with group B strep, strains 19 to 21, in tandem with selenium supplementation. In each condition, the addition of selenium significantly represses the association of group B strep with gestational membranes. But importantly, the alpha CADD mutant is repressed to undetectable levels upon treatment with selenium, the one thing that leads to preeclampsia. Underscoring the CADD expression is crucial for group B strep to resist selenium stress at the host pathogen interface. What? Selenium helps to reduce group B stress growth, bacterial growth. They even show you here, those who did not get selenium, they got group B strep, and look at the left bar in blue, and then look what happened when they added selenium. In every case, just died. Group B strep levels, drop. Look at that, almost zero in the middle group. It's amazing. Selenium is a required nutrient for the placental development during pregnancy. In a study of 1,500 mother offspring dyads, the group, selenium levels were positively associated with cognitive development in the offspring. Additionally, selenium supplementation has been associated with protective effects. Hold on. If you want a smart baby with a healthy neurological development, selenium you need to be supplementing as a mother while pregnant. If you want a smart kid, if you want a dumb kid, don't take selenium. If you want a kid that struggles neurologically developing, don't take selenium. If you want to be a part of a support group in the future, you suffer from Munchausen syndrome where you want to have a victim child that will give you love and attention by doctors for the rest of your life. I think it's called Munchausen by proxy. Go do that. Don't take selenium while pregnant. You will increase the risk of your child having neurological delays, and you can go spend time with all of the counselors in your school to get your kids special assistance and blah, 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 and you'll be seen as a hero mom if you are a victim and you like that kind of crap. The incidence of premature, if you don't want a kid that's dumb, smart, don't take selenium. Go get vaccinated while pregnant. The incidence of premature rupture of membranes was significantly lower in the selenium supplemented group. These findings indicate that selenium supplementation in pregnant patients can alter adverse pregnancy outcomes, such as PROM, premature rupture of membranes. Studies have shown that sodium selenite, selenium, has antimicrobial activity against a variety of bacterial pathogens, including Bacillus subtilis, Staph aureus, staph infections, E. coli, and Klebsiella. Additionally, selenium nanoparticles have also demonstrated significant antibacterial efficacy, particularly against gram-positive bacteria like group B strep, including methicillin-resistant Staph aureus strains, staph infections. So now we've talked about vitamin C. We've demonstrated its protective effect with the baby's brain and health and the mom against infections. Now we're into clinical nutrition. This is zinc, zinc in pregnancy. Marked changes on the immune response following zinc therapy for pregnant females challenged with an infection, a parasite called Trypanosoma cruzi. T. cruzi is what it's called, abbreviated typically. The recommended dietary allowance for zinc is 11 milligrams per day for men and 8 milligrams a day for women is what the FDA recommends. Zinc has an important role in effective immune responses. You learned about this in COVID, that for viruses, zinc is like, you know, the zinc ionophore. It's the bullet that protects your body from getting affected by a virus. The human body has limited zinc stores that are easily depleted and cannot compensate for long periods of zinc deficiency. You need to take zinc, supplemented every day or in your food. Several other conditions may affect zinc uptake by tissues, including infections, acute trauma, and other stressors that induce increased secretion of cortisol and cytokines, and consequently alter blood zinc concentrations. Did you know when you're stressed out, cortisol goes up? And did you know that when cortisol goes up, it depletes your zinc reservoir in your body? You just pee it out, poop it out. And do you know that zinc boosts the immune system? So when you're stressed and cortisol goes up, your body depletes zinc and then you become immune deficient. And now you'll get sick more often. This is why stressed people get sick. It's why when people are stressed, they get fever, blisters, and cold sores. Guess what the number one mineral deficiency that you can apply to your lips to make a fever, blister, or cold sore go away is zinc. Is it all making sense now? Good. The main goal of this study was to establish a connection between infectious disease, immunity, and pregnancy by comparing the modulation, the governing of the host immune response with zinc treatment during the acute phase of the Chagas disease, which is what this parasite causes. The dose used in our assay was 20 milligrams for every kilogram of body weight. Was informed by the findings of Pona Mengelor and his team, some other researchers, in a previous study. Previous studies have demonstrated that zinc treatment was able to improve immune system function, thus increasing this host, the person's, resistance to T. cruzi infection, as evidenced by a significant reduction in parasitemia, the amounts of parasites in the body. This is a protozoa parasite, by the way, a single-cell organism, which you contract from water, soil, food. Now, these researchers named Kong Galvez and Nito and their team demonstrated the importance of this oligo element called zinc in mounting an effective anti-T. cruzi parasite immune response because placentas from zinc supplemented groups displayed reduced mastogote burdens. Now, I had to look up what that word meant, and I'm going to show you in a second. Compared to controls. Placentas that had more zinc in it had reduced mastogote burdens. What in the world is a mastogote? It's on the screen, everybody. Merriam-Webster. I'll read it to you. The non-motile parasitic form in the life cycle of some protozoa parasites. Zinc. Saturated placentas had reduced parasite burdens compared to controls. In agreement with these studies, our data confirmed the critical importance of zinc because its administration triggered reduced tissue parasitism and parasitemia. Remember, toxoplasmosis is one of the most common. I showed that it was number 7 on the list of most common prenatal infections. That's a parasite. So you're learning here about zinc and parasites. A study conducted in placentas, by the way, which are only in pregnant women, a study conducted by Brzu and his team evaluated the possible impact of zinc treatment during T. cruzi infection. demonstrating that rats infected with this parasite supplemented with zinc had strikingly enhanced macrophage white blood cell counts and interferon production compared with controls, which correlated with significantly increased nitric oxide production by macrophages and an enhanced resistance to acute infection with this parasite, zinc. We conclude that oral swallowing of this trace element called zinc has beneficial effects, including protecting fetuses against the harmful actions of parasites like T. cruzi infection. You're welcome. Ask your doctor if zinc is right for you, because it is. The need, this is from the Journal of Nutrition, the need for maternal zinc supplementation in developing countries. George and his team randomly assigned 168 women in India to receive either 45 milligrams of zinc per day as zinc sulfate, or they get in a control group and they didn't receive any. After zinc supplementation, blood levels of zinc increased significantly in the zinc supplemented women compared to the control group who didn't get any. So all they're confirming there is that when these people swallowed zinc, it ended up in their bloodstream. Amazing. Notice vaccines are like, you can only get immune boosting if we directly put it into your blood. If you just swallow minerals the immune system needs, it'll show up in your blood and build your immune system. That's what you're learning. After zinc supplementation, the blood levels of zinc went up significantly. Birth weights of children of mothers in the zinc supplemented group were significantly higher than the birth weight of children of mothers in the control group. Now, just for perspective, every pregnant woman out there is going to say this: I hope my baby is not so big it's going to hurt to come out and rip me in half, and I'd rather get a C-section than that. No. Birth weight of an infant, the more heavy and healthier the birth weight, the healthier the baby, the lower the risk for infant death, or what they call infant mortality rates. The smaller the baby, the higher the risk of death. You want all pregnant women, all mothers, all grandmothers of children that are pregnant, you want healthier body weights of babies. Birth weight is significant, and you want a healthier birth weight, not smaller. You want more. God will not develop in the baby of a mother a baby so big the mom cannot push it out. That's just dumb. Science wants you to believe otherwise so they can bill your health insurance for a C-section, serious surgery. That includes anesthesia and all that crap they can bill you for. Remember, it's free if you just birth the baby out in the woods in a squatting position. It's free. But if you go to a hospital, they can bill you for everything. Healthier birth weights you want. Infants of mothers in the zinc-treated group had higher gestational ages, meaning they had less preemie babies than those of mothers in the control group. How many of you want a premature baby born and being put in a NICU, a newborn ICU, because they're too small to go home? How many preemies are born in America? Did you know zinc prevents that and helps you get your baby to full term before labor and delivery? The difference reached statistical significance only when the supplement had been given for longer than 3 months. You might want to take zinc your whole pregnancy, because it only became super obvious for the researchers that gestational periods, how long the baby stays in the womb developing, is full term the longer you take the zinc. But most they noticed if you took it for at least 3 months of the pregnancy or longer. So just take it every day. Five studies examined various aspects of infant immunity. Zinc supplementation during pregnancy resulted in higher IgG levels in cord blood in Peru. Fewer anergic reactions in the tetanus skin test were observed after moms were given zinc supplementation in infants born with low birth weight in Bangladesh. Women with intermittent tetanus toxoid, which is deadly, this bacteria, antibody titers at baseline, maternal zinc supplementation resulted in higher antibody titers in the infants. So if the mom took zinc, the baby had higher amounts of tetanus antibodies because the mom took zinc. It was concluded that there might be a positive effect of the mom supplementing zinc during pregnancy on some aspects of the baby's immune system. I don't know any mom that's like, I can't wait to have this baby. I hope it's sickly. No, you want a strong immune system, which is why you think vaccines are important. Did you know, and did your OBGYN or midwife tell you, that supplementing with zinc provides infant immunity? And if they didn't, they must not be watching the Dr. Artist Show. You might want to tell them to start watching, or start reading research studies. The differences in morbidity disease observed are consistent with the findings of clinical trials in infants and children showing beneficial effects of zinc supplementation on both the prevalence and incidence of diseases, and are thought to reflect the prominent role of zinc in both the immune and non-immune host defense mechanisms. Work with animal models indicates a role of perinatal zinc status while pregnant in optimal development of the baby's immune system. Reduced lymphoid organ size, tonsils, spleen, these are lymphoid organs. Reduced lymphoid organs. Reduced gamma globulin concentrations in blood lymphocyte numbers, which are your white blood cells, have been observed in offspring born to zinc deficient mice and monkeys. Supposedly, we come from monkeys. So if that happens in them, guess what happens to you? If you're not taking zinc, you'll have a weaker immune system in your kid, smaller tonsils, smaller spleen, lowered immune cells and white blood cells in their immune system. Oh, which by the way, if you don't give them zinc while you're pregnant and that doesn't benefit the mom and the baby, and then that baby's born, its immune system's weaker. It can't produce white blood cells and its lymphoid organ glands, which are the biggest part of your immune system, they're not even fully formed. And then you're going to vaccinate those kids? That's a double whammy for their immune system. In many countries, zinc intake of pregnant women is low and needs to be optimized. Data are emerging that indicate that increasing zinc intake and status improves health. Ask your OBGYN, your pediatrician, if zinc is right for you. Now, we're going to talk about the one and only thing you're ever going to hear about prenatals to prevent birth defects, and that is folate, which is vitamin B9, which is why any woman is told by their OBGYN today, make sure you take a prenatal during pregnancy. It's just for this, actually. It shouldn't be, but this is the main reason. This is titled, this article, The Critical Role of Folate in Prenatal Health and a Proposed Shift from Folic Acid to 5-methyltetrahydrofolate Supplementation, a methyl form of B9, which is what we have in our actual kids' vitamin and in our adult gummies, multivitamin, that, yes, you can take if you're pregnant. Deficiency in mothers. Vitamin B9 deficiencies are responsible for a variety of issues in both mothers and infants. In pregnant individuals, deficiencies in folate, vitamin B9, are responsible for the onset of macrocytosis enlargement of red blood cells, which can lead to megaloblastic anemia or pancytopenia. Neither one sounds good. In a study examining 227 pregnant individuals in Korea, they identified a positive correlation between homocysteine levels, a free radical, and the incidence of preeclampsia. Therefore, normal vitamin B9 levels may be protective against the occurrence of preeclampsia in low homocysteine conditions. Folate deficiency vitamin B9 can lead to other complications such as preterm birth, which is defined as a baby at younger than 37 weeks gestation, and small for gestational age, the baby will be percentile in weight at their prospective gestational age. Vitamin B9 deficiency. Deficiencies in maternal folic acid, which is vitamin B9, folate, have a pronounced effect on fetal development, your baby's development. Mice models have demonstrated a correlation between periconceptual folic acid deficiency, around conception vitamin B9 deficiency, and poor brain development, decreasing overall brain mass and increasing negative behaviors in their children, their offspring. Well, do you want negative behavior children? If you do, don't take vitamin B9. Don't take folate. Using the third edition of the Bayley Scales of Infant and Toddler Development to assess neural and psychomotor development of the baby, receptive communication and expressive communication scores improved by 5 and 3.5 points, respectively. In children of mothers taking at least 5 milligrams of vitamin B9 called folic acid compared with those taking no folic acid, kids were smarter, communicated better if the mom took vitamin B9. These statistically significant improvements reflect elevated communication skills compared with the control, a direct correlate of neurobehavioral development in the children. Well, do you want healthy neurodevelopment children? You might want to make sure mama's taking vitamin B9. Norway showed that children whose mothers used conceptual folic acid supplementation, either alone or in combination with another supplement, were less likely to develop a severe language delay compared with the children of mothers who did not use periconceptual supplementation. Ask your doctor. Vitamin B9 is right for you. Now, this is our Immune C product, vitamin C. Remember, you have options how to prevent prenatal infections. I just showed you, and how to protect the immune system of your baby, even in your offspring, how to reduce miscarriage, preeclampsia worries, how to fight off infections, including viruses, bacteria, and parasites, all naturally. This is our Immune C, which is vitamin C. You'll see 1,000 milligrams per dose there. This is our selenium, which is the selenomethionine version, which is the exact form they were using in the actual research study we just showed you. 200 micrograms is one. I would, during pregnancy, recommend doing two of these a day. Consult your healthcare provider. Zinc Plus. This is our Zinc Plus product, 30 milligrams a day. You should be on it. And then our Doc's Healthy Kids and our adult multivitamin gummies. We have highlighted on the screen, you've got vitamin C there. You've got your vitamin B9, which is methylfolate there. And then you've got your zinc also in there. This is the QR code. Scan it. If you enjoyed this presentation, you learned anything, if you want to go download this PowerPoint for anybody you know that's pregnant, you're pregnant, you're going to be pregnant, want to review this info, you don't have to watch the video. Go to the resources tab at thedrartistshow.com. Click How to Prevent Prenatal Infections Part 2. That is this PowerPoint. Download it, save it, share it far and wide. If you're an OBGYN, please give this to all your patients. This is our book about COVID-19. Go get it. Still an Amazon bestseller in multiple categories. Number one in the vaccine category a year and a half later, our book, Moving Beyond the COVID-19 Lies. And remember, that's the cover of the book. To this day, there are still fake books using the name of my title and my personal name on the cover, acting like it's my book. It's not. It's the only one that looks like this. It's got the Atlas of the World and a vaccine right in the middle of it called Moving Beyond the COVID-19 Lies. All right, everybody. I'm Dr. Brian Artis. I hope you enjoyed this part two of our already part one review with Michelle Routon, How to Prevent Prenatal Infections. I hope you enjoyed these presentations. I hope it served your life. I hope it protects your future children and grandchildren, nephews, nieces, with anybody who's gotten this information. I will see you next time on The Dr. Artis Show. God bless. Thanks for watching this week's episode. Visit thedrartistshow.com/follow for my official social media channels and free healing resources. Beware of fraud accounts. Neither I nor my company will ever ask you for money, crypto, or personal information through your social media or DMs. Like this video and share with a friend. And if you're not already, subscribe and follow along so you don't miss any updates from me, the only real Dr. Brian Artis. And remember, nature always wins. We'll be right back.